sex fans, welcome back. Today is Monday, April 29th, 2013, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
Howard! Howard! Tell them who I am!
I don't think I can help you, lady. What I know for certain is that I'm not Howard. I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. You know, I'm proud to say that I have been able to attract quite a number of renowned authors, artists, and photographers to join me in this, the Erotic Mind Show. But none of my previous guests have come with quite the pedigree of today's guest, the amazing woman who is standing by, mic in hand, is also here as part of the Sex Education series, don't you know? What luck! Another twofer show, Smutty Erotica, and a look at the world of fetish sex, kink, and alternative lifestyles. It simply doesn't get any better than this.
Tell them who I am! I insist you tell them who I am right this minute!
As soon as I find out, I'm going to tell everyone. But right now, I have the distinct honor of welcoming that international sensation, Laura Antoniou. She is a prolific author, esteemed educator and activist, and, as we are about to hear, someone who absolutely loves to stir the shit.
Who is that dangerously unbalanced woman?
I hope you're talking about that other lady and not Laura. Laura will also read a steamy selection from one of her books in the Marketplace trilogy. You don't want to miss this, sex fans. You'll find everything that you need to know about Laura on her site, cleverly named lantoniou.com. Of course, she is also on FetLife and Facebook, and don't miss her kick-ass Twitter feed. Look for all these links in today's podcast posting. Before we begin, however, a word from our sponsor. This week's podcast is brought to you by DrDickSexAdvice.com and DrDickSexToyReviews.com. That's right, sex fans. Our sponsor today is me. Think of this as our very own spring pledge drive. You see, I want to call your attention to a standing invitation for everyone in my audience to support and underwrite these marvelous shows. I'm exceptionally proud of the quality programming I've been bringing you, my international audience. Over the last 6 years, I've presented a variety of extraordinarily informative, enriching, and entertaining shows, interesting interviews, enlightening Q&A, and even some fun product reviews. I mean, where else can you find this sort of diverse sex-positive programming, and all of this always comes to you absolutely free?
I find that story intensely moving.
I hope enough to pull out your credit card. So, okay, right about now you're probably asking yourself, hey, Dr. Dick, how can I help support and underwrite this effort? Well, I'll tell you. You just mosey on over to either one of my sites, DrDickSexAdvice.com or DrDickSexToyReviews.com, and look for the donate button. It's a blue heart-shaped icon. Click on it and make your contribution. Any amount will do. But those folks donating $50 or more will receive a swell thank you gift. Excellent personal lube, smutty porn DVDs, wonderful sex toys, or some delicious erotica. Be the first one on your block to join me in bringing the world this fun, informative, and enlightening programming. Okay, on with the show. Welcome, Laura, and thank you for joining us. It's so great to have you with us for this Erotic Mind podcast. I am delighted that we could arrange this time to be together, even though you are feverishly traveling about on your latest book tour. So now that you're here, would you like to say hello to all the nice people?
Hello, nice people, and hello to the nasty ones.
Oh, good. Good, because I was just going to add that, don't you know? We know there's a bunch of perverts in the audience, myself included, so there you go. So how is the tour going?
The tour is intense. I've already been to Seattle and Vancouver and Denver, and I just got back from Chicago a couple days ago, and then next Thursday I take off for an entire month of nonstop travel.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Goodness. Better you than me. I can't do that, honestly. And I should let you know that as we begin our chat, I need to say outright that I am like all nervous having such a big shot award-winning author sharing the airwaves with me. I've had an opportunity to listen to the set that you did with one of the giants of the sex positive and erotic worlds, Tristan Taramino, on her show, Sex Out Loud. You sure know how to hang with the cool kids.
Oh, let me tell you, I met Tristan when I was writing novels for Masquerade Books back in the early 90s, and she was hired as an administrative assistant and editor.
Oh, no kidding.
Straight out of college.
Oh, my.
And so that's how long I know Tristan.
Wow.
It was a pleasure of mine last year to actually sell her a short story for one of her anthologies.
Yes, that is so amazing. That is really amazing. So, interestingly enough, she said about you that you are one of the most published female writers of the queer, BDSM, and erotic genre, starting with in the early 1990s at Masquerade Publishing. She has been a prolific writer and editor of anthologies and magazines ever since. She has written dozens of short stories, essays, and other works in various genres for over 25 years. Darling, you are like this huge institution, don't you know? Shortly, they're going to be erecting Laura monuments on every street corner. Did you ever imagine that you'd be as famous and revered for something that you appear to love doing?
Oh, hell no. But you have to understand, okay, I am a big frog in a really minuscule pond. I mean, notice the qualifiers there. Queer.
Yes.
BDSM, and erotic.
Well, you know, I've known about you for a long, long time, and it wasn't until Cleus Press sent me a copy of your new book, The Killer Who Wore Leather, which we're going to talk about in length, hopefully, in a minute, that I had the chutzpah, mind you, to reach out to you and ask for an interview. So good, good, good.
I'm actually much friendlier than my pictures would say.
I like it. So Tristan goes on to say that you are best known for your novel, your novels, the Marketplace series, the first series ever to feature a transgender man as a continuing lead character. I want to talk more about this series in a bit, but for right now, I just want to ask, did you know that you were breaking ground with this character, and if so, why did you risk it?
No, I had no idea.
Really?
I had started, I proposed the Marketplace series as a trilogy to Richard Kasek at Masquerade Books.
I
and
see.
All I had written about in the synopsis for the first novel was I described the owners of this Long Island slave training facility and the four slaves who were going to be trained in the course of the novel, and I said, and the mysterious butler. Because I was writing formula fiction, and
uh-huh.
Doesn't formula fiction require
Absolutely.
A mysterious butler?
Even the Vatican has mysterious butlers
exactly.
anymore.
Exactly.
There
exactly.
you go.
And they're all gay.
Yes.
So I made up this character, and then I said, well, what's the mystery about him? And it became a two-level mystery. And one is that he's a trans man.
Uh-huh.
And that lasted until I got sick and tired of people asking me about it.
Uh-huh.
And the other was that he really had the heart of a slave, not a trainer,
right.
And yet was continually frustrated in search of fulfilling that destiny.
Wow. We should say for our audience, those unversed in what we are talking about, that this is not like slavery in terms of, you know, masters and slaves in the Old South, but consensual BDSM and power play and power exchange dynamics, yes?
Right, except in the Marketplace books, I suppose an international consensual slave market
wow.
where people are recruited
yes.
to serve. They are specially trained, and then they're sold at auction
wow.
for
cool.
limited amounts of time.
Right.
And I'm not the first one to come up with that idea. John Preston has written stories like that, and Rice has written stories like
right.
that. And of course, since the Marketplace, BDSM erotica is full of stories.
Right.
That feature that sort of thing. Mine, however, might have been the first that depicted the slaves and their masters, trainers, and everything else in the whole wide spectrum of humanity.
Right.
All colors, ages, sizes, etc.
I want to talk more about that, too, in a minute. But first, you say about yourself that you are a proud member of the middle-aged guard.
Yes.
And as a card-carrying member of the old guard, I got to say I love that. So tell us more why you chose this self-identification.
Well, in the modern BDSM world, there's a fascination with a fantasy past. You know, everyone has their golden age.
Oh, it's true.
And the fantasy that's sustained in the leather community is that somehow after World War II, all of these gay veterans came home and, inspired by the military lifestyle, they proceeded to put on leather clothes, join motorcycle clubs, and go to bars where they made specialized clubs that were sort of mostly kinky, mm-hmm. and they had elaborate rituals and customs that were somehow universal across the United States. Of course, that's nonsense.
That's why they call it fiction.
Right. Except that they don't call it fiction.
Oh, that's right.
There is such a romantic adherence to this this kind of model of behavior that it leaked over into the much wider heterosexual kinky community to the point that you would have a heterosexual man standing up there saying, I was old guard trained, in which case I would ask him, whose dick did you suck? Because, really...
It's exactly that.
You know, obviously, you went to gay men to learn this thing, and you must have sucked a lot of dick, because, well, that's why they were into it, really, being gay men and all. And so, you had the old guard, and then, on the other hand, you had the next generation, which is the sort of tongue-in-cheek name for the 20-something kinksters mm-hmm. out there. And I said, well, you know what? God damn it, I'm middle-aged guard. Which means that my bedtime is the time that I used to go out clubbing.
Yeah.
And it means, you know, date night means that I cooked.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I asked it to do. I remember I lived in San Francisco in the Bay Area for 30 years before I moved up here to Seattle, and I remember in the mid-70s going down Folsom Street and where all the leather bars were, and there was one place that was particularly intimidating called Phoebe's, and the leather aficionados would park their hogs, really, outside of the bar, you know, in a row. And somebody, as a joke, brought one of a children's big wheel and parked it right next to it. Well, it just blew me away. We were hysterical for like hours afterwards. But anyhow, that certainly was the case. I mean, it was very intimidating for people who didn't know what was going on, and that a lot of it was just play acting.
And a lot of it is just the fact that gay men, once they gather in communities, hook up.
Yes, that's what it is. That's all right, it is.
With greater ease than any other subculture.
Yeah.
Because, number one, men. and number two, I mean, once you have the freedom to have those sorts of connections, you grab it. It's very funny. People kind of assume that lesbians are the same way, but no, lesbians really do kind of move in pretty fast, get married, get cats,
and stop having sex. Like
yes,
right thereafter.
That too.
Lesbian bed death. I've written about
Listen,
that on my site.
I've been saying for years that if the conservatives want gay people to stop having sex, then let us get married.
I love it. I absolutely love it. You are so right. So you've been a sought-after speaker on topics relating to alternative sexual practices at over 150 conferences and events since the 1980s. You teach entertain, exhort, and even rant, I hear. Care to share some of your pet peeves?
Oh, try to stop me. I think my biggest pet peeve lately is what I've been calling competitive douchebaggery.
Oh, there you go.
And that's where people seem to feel the need to compete in storytelling about how awesome they are. And awesome varies, of course, according to what you're measuring. But in the BDSM kink community, it usually translates to, we live the 24/7 total power exchange lifestyle, where, you know, we are never out of role, and I was born to be this. Or it could be as simple as, I can take a beating better than anyone, or I can beat people better than anyone. And people get up and congratulate themselves on how awesome they are, to the point that someone who's new to the scene or just coming out, or even someone who's been around for a little while, will feel compelled to either join in the competition or will be repelled at fast rates by what sounds kind of grandiose, if not actually dangerous.
What gives rise to that, do you suppose? I mean, is it just, you know, ego kind of stuff, or is it, you know, trying to get some cred in the community?
Yes, yes. I think there's a search for credibility and authenticity in a world where, let's face it, we're making this shit up as we go along.
It's so true.
It's so why true. The people are so fascinated by the concept of the old guard. They really want a rule book, even though at the same time they'll be telling you that they're the fierce outsiders and the one percenters who are not like anyone else. And
no cultural safe words, rebels. No nothing.
Yeah, yeah. And they'll go on and on and on about that. But if someone said, psst, here it is, the actual guidebook, this is how to do it right, they'd be grabbing it.
Uh-huh. It's funny. It you are so right on. I absolutely love it. And it's astonishing to me that, you know, they still put up with you when you are. And maybe it's because you are in it and you can critique it from the inside. Because my sense is that a lot of the people that I know in the scene have very thin skin, and they have very little sense of humor about who they are and how they present themselves in the world, and thus it, you know, it gets deadly serious, and not in a happy sort of way.
No, pretension is sort of like a perennial zit on the community. It just it pops up in the middle of everything that's happy at the worst possible times. And I like to skewer it.
There. Excellent. I'm so glad you're there and doing precisely that. So you are so busy. When do you find time to touch yourself impurely?
You know, not as often as I used to.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. That just breaks my heart.
But I will say I am.
We could do it together now. How's that? You're there and I'm here.
Yeah, but I'm kind of tethered to the computer.
Oh, good Lord.
I will say I am absolutely blown away by new vibrator designs.
Oh, yes.
Damn, have they changed since
they?
I was a kid and I bought my first one.
Haven't they? We're doing lots of reviews on DrDickSexToyReviews.com, and you know, the Dr. Dick review crew, a cadre of folks who help do the reviews for me. I mean, they're loving
job.
It. It is a dirty job.
Well, let me tell you, I love the entire Lilo line.
Oh yes.
All right, they are so fabulous, and I was just at the Pleasure Chest in Chicago, hanging out with Sarah Sloan for a while.
Oh, and a bud of mine.
Mm-hmm. And she turned me on to this vibrator where the action actually moves it forward and back in a thrusting motion.
Oh, my.
That's new. And so I had to get one of those, too.
And, you know, I recommend the Leaf line. They won a bunch of awards, our Best of the Year awards. Great Canadian company, very green, outstanding group of people. Just look that up on Dr. Dick's Sex Toy Reviews, and you'll find some extraordinary things. So how many publications, hard copy and web-based, do you have out there? Do you even know?
You know what? I made a note of this because I saw this in your notes to me, and I was like, I'd better count. So I can tell you. Because the last time someone asked me, I actually honestly said I have no idea.
Uh-huh.
So, 24 books consisting of 8 novels, 15 anthologies, and 1 nonfiction book.
Yikes.
20 short stories and essays in anthologies that I could remember offhand, not counting translations or publications outside of the United States, and over 50 assorted smutty letters and short stories under various names in magazines from the early 80s, the early 90s. My own website has a lot of my speeches and essays on it, and I've also written an etiquette column and a column on alt sex practices for alt.com.
Wow. So you're basically writing in what we call sex writing, which includes erotica and, you know, essays and that sort of thing. Are you writing in any other genre as well?
Well, I wrote my first kind of romance story last year. It was a gay male military romance set in World War I called Christmas Truce. And that was kind of fun, actually. It was asked of me. Someone needed military stories mm-hmm. for an anthology, and then they didn't tell me until afterwards that they wanted them to be contemporary military. So I had this lovely romantic story, and I wound up giving it to Renaissance eBooks,
uh-huh.
who released it as a single for 99
oh,
cents.
Wow.
And so that was kind of fun. And of course, last year I also wrote my first mystery, The Killer Wore Leather.
Yes.
I have written stories in the paranormal genre, like I wrote a story about a Jewish lesbian vampire, and it's called Shayna Madel.
I love it.
And I would like to write more in paranormal, but so far no editor has expressed an interest in my proposed sort of sexually charged paranormal series. So we'll see what happens there.
The reason that I ask that is that I'm writing in a bunch of different genres. I have a book out called The Amateur's Guide to Death and Dying, my first published work from a couple years ago was about my life as a gay priest,
mm-hmm.
and I have 2 children's books. One is out and the other one is still being illustrated. And I also have a book coming out called The Gospel of Kink, interestingly enough. And one of the things that I've been encountering from people in these different areas, from kink to death and dying, is they're off-put that I'm doing this other stuff. Like I was invited to a conference about death and bereavement, and asked to put together a presentation, and I did, and I was turned down, and I found out that the people were off-put by Dr. Dick of Dr. Dick Sex Advice, and I was thinking, you know, what a waste, you know, what a shame is, you know, that somehow, you know, somebody who writes a sex advice column can't do children's book or a nonfiction about, you know, the end of life. It just blows me away.
The publishing industry is by nature very conservative.
I'll say.
And it's sort of like it's sort of like acting. Once you get pegged in a role,
yes,
it just confuses people when you don't stay there.
Yes, it does. It's very, very confusing. And you know, and as you say, getting pegged, I guess it's a double-edged sword, because once you're pegged, then you can write in that genre, you know, until you're blue in the face. But God forbid you mosey on anyplace else.
Well, I mean, even in the smaller erotica world, I experienced a lot of trouble with the marketplace books and the gay bookstores,
right.
Back in the day, because they didn't know where to shelve them.
That's true enough.
Gay bookstores used to divide their fiction between the gay men's section and the lesbian section.
Mm-hmm.
And they would look at mine that had people of all sexual orientations, and they'd say, well, we don't know where to put it.
It's
and
really
I used to
amazing.
Say, put it by the cash register.
I absolutely love it. Oh, my goodness. So listen, I want to make sure that you know that you're welcome to burst into reading examples of your work at any moment, talking about the erotic mind is swell and all, but savoring the fruit of that mind's labor is even better. And, you know, now is a good time. Any chance we could ask you to read something?
Sure. How about if I read something from a Marketplace short story?
Oh, good, good, good.
Okay, this was a story that won an award. It won the John Preston Short Fiction Award, which was an extra honor for me because John Preston is one of my literary role models, really. It is a story that I wrote for the ebook edition of The Slave. And the setup is that Robin, the main character, who is a bisexual woman, belongs to a pair of gay men who are throwing a sex party. And they are going to let her serve at the party, but for the purposes of their all-male atmosphere, they cross-dress her as a young man, and she will be expected to boot black at the party. And so I wrote this as a kind of gift to all the boot blacks who've taken care of my leather over the years. And I was very pleased that it won an award, and this is the start of the preparation for the sex party. Preparation for the party was more than costuming. Altogether, there would be 32 guests for most of a day and far into the night. There were no scheduled meals, nothing to break up the potential for sex, play, or leisure. Instead, Raoul planned an ever-changing buffet of finger foods and barbecue. There would be four additional slaves borrowed from two of Jimmy's friends, just for non-sexual service. All of them would be assisting Raoul with the cooking and the bartending, for those times when Raoul would be conscripted for his master's pleasure. "And that's another reason why I want you here," he'd said to Robin, as she struggled with the number of things she had to learn about being a man in order to be acceptable. "For all this time, I've worked these parties and I never got to play." "Well, I'm not going to get to play," Robin said with a grin. "It's not my problem, sugar." Play was the whole point of the party. Bowls of condoms and piles of gloves and dental dams were procured in both latex and nitrile, along with bottles of several different types of lubricant and tubs of Crisco. Extra cushioned outdoor furniture was brought in, and hammocks were slung from frames around the edges of the spacious acre behind the house. A sturdy steel frame was erected on one side of the pool with bondage points, and another one mirrored it on the other side, supporting a sling of black nylon. Every whip, flogger, paddle, and crop was brought out, examined for flaws, and cleaned or restored as needed. Electrical toys, cupping sets, a pirate's hoard of silvery or bronze-colored clips and clamps, and every strange or rarely used implement of pain and pleasure were dragged out and placed in Carl's hands. He was the one who went through the house, back deck, yard, and garden, and found every space where bondage points could be made, rearranged the furniture, and he oversaw the placement of spanking benches, kneeling frames, and oddly shaped cages. Then he erected smaller racks for the toys, so no one would ever have to go far to grab something for impact, torture, pleasure, or penetration. Extra video screens were rented to show non-stop porn in almost every room. The side effects from all this preparation were laughably predictable. The tight swimsuits favored by Eric and Jimmy as the preferred uniform for their male house slaves did nothing to hide the steady stream of erections. Robin couldn't hide her stiff nipples under the thin lycra of her running tops either, and she did manage to slip a panty liner into her shorts after finding herself far too wet for her own comfort. Then, the masters made things even worse by commanding the slaves to torment each other.
How you do go on. I love it. Oh, gosh. No wonder you win awards. Holy cow. So tell us about this Christopher Morgan person.
Well, Christopher Morgan is my male nom de plume. Now, it's not the only male name I wrote under. Mm-hmm. For a while in the 90s, I was actually a freelance writer for about a dozen different gay male digests. Those are the porn magazines that you can easily hold in one hand.
Right, exactly. One-hand reading. Absolutely.
Exactly.
My favorite kind.
They always had names like, City Boy, Country Boy, Bondage Boy. It was, one after the other. Or Daddy, I think, was one that I wrote for. And these editors would send me a list at the beginning of every week, and they would say, we need one bondage story, we need one tit story, we need, you know, da-da-da-da, we interracial, intergenerational. And I would either write letters, which paid $25, or short stories, which were about 3,000 words and paid $50.
Wow.
And I wrote them under so many different names, and I never kept track of them because I didn't think I was ever going to do anything with them. Mm-hmm. And so I actually don't know how many of those I wrote. Wow. However, one of them that I wrote called Intense Encounter, Intents, which was about a city boy who went camping and just failed utterly at the whole camping thing, but had hot sex in the woods. Was actually picked up for, like, you know, someone's best gay male erotica of the year book. And then it was picked up again for the best of the best.
Wow.
And so I stuck with that name, Christopher Morgan, to write my first novel, which was called Muscle Bound. And then a collection of short stories that I used that name as the editor, that was called Steam Gauge.
So it was curious to me when I first started this Erotic Mind series. I started reaching out to people who I saw whose names were familiar to me from anthologies of gay erotica, and realized that the vast majority of them were women.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it was astonishing to me, because they got it, for the most part anyhow, they got it pitch perfect. And I was wondering, because I couldn't return the favor, I wouldn't know how to begin, you know, lesbian erotica.
Well, I'll tell you the harsh truth. Men are easy.
Oh.
Men are
easy. Once you've
just
seen a penis, you've seen them all.
You
there
know,
you go.
They want numbers. So they want sizes of things. They want body weights. They want graphic description of an actual sexual act.
Yes.
They want payoff.
Right. Right. It's like gay porn. I mean, within 20 minutes, you have to have X, Y, and Z, and any number of cum shots. But
yep.
Anything other than that is superfluous, and don't bother.
Yeah. When you strip it down, it's really, really simple to write gay male smut. And the reason why so many women wrote it is because I think women, even the queer ones, can easily appreciate the male body, and it's easy. Writing lesbian smut is actually harder for me.
Wow.
I find it more demanding.
Wow. Well, but, you know, my unfamiliarity, I mean, not having lady parts and all, I want to think to myself, well, you know, sensation is sensation, and, you know, it comes from kind of down there someplace, and I know.
Are you
Anastasia? Oh, yeah, actually, I am. and I know about kissing and romance and all that kind of stuff, but I would find it really difficult to, you know, to write that. Lesbian stuff, and I've talked to a number of lesbian authors in this series, and they just laugh, and, you know, tell me I'm silly. So I probably am.
The study has shown that women are more sexually fluid than men.
Yes.
Right, and so even a lesbian woman is more likely to have had experience with sex with men,
right,
than most gay men will have in terms of sex with women.
So
also,
true.
Men are more capable of detaching emotionally,
right,
while having sex, while women are not.
Yeah.
And so a man could carry through with the motions, so to speak.
Yes.
Buoyed by sensation, by fantasy, et cetera, have a great time and not feel like he's really participated in having sex with a woman,
mm-hmm,
even though he just has. Women, slightly harder to detach.
Wow.
Although I've certainly known women who can quite easily.
Well, you know, I'm just looking at my clock and I see that our time is up for today, and I can hardly let you go. although I must. And I promised that I would only take up this much of your time this week. Any chance you could come back next week?
Absolutely.
Oh, Get Out. I love it. I love it. I love it. Well, you just made my day. So before we go, would you give us your website address? Walk us around a little bit. Tell us where we can buy your books and so we can visit you in the interim.
Sure. My website is ellantoniou.com, which is my first initial last name, ellantoniou.com. And you can find some of my speeches there. You could see covers of books and get links to buy them. And usually I have my travel schedule up there as well. I'm also on Facebook and FetLife.
Right.
And I also twit.
Oh, are you really?
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
well, I must have missed that. Because I will certainly include all of these links, your website, FetLife, and Facebook, and your Twitter feed, and we will have that in today's podcast posting. Until next week, then, thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to more. Thank you. Pretty amazing show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad that you could join me. Tune in next week at this same time for part two of my chat with Laura Antoniou and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
I suppose you have come to apologize.
Well, no, actually, I'm going to pitch you on supporting these shows. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick Sex Advice and Dr. Dick Sex Toy Reviews.com. Simply put, I need your help to continue to provide shows like the one you just heard. But you may be asking yourself, hey, why should I make a donation? Well, I'll tell you. Infrastructure and administrative costs for a free site like this are astronomical. Also, if you like what you see and hear, if you enjoy all the wonderful features of DrDickSexAdvice.com and DrDickSexToyReviews.com, then I invite you to make a modest one-time donation online. We suggest a donation between $20 and $50, but any amount will be gladly accepted.
What are you trying to say?
I'm trying to say that this is a one-time donation. There are no automatic credit card renewals or processing fees, and you can be certain that every dime you donate will go to supporting this valuable sex-positive effort. Finally, your donation underscores your social conscience. Your sponsorship helps disseminate badly needed sex education and sexual enrichment messages throughout the entire world. I thank you in advance for your generosity. Okay, until next time, remember, sex is good, and good sex, well, that's even better. Over and out.